This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors this week passed an amended budget for the coming fiscal year. The changes were made to what was proposed by County Executive Chris Abley.
The new document has some key similarities to what Abley proposed, but also some major differences. Abley is expected to make some vetoes in coming days, and the county board will follow with a meeting at which the vetoes can be overridden.
County Executive Chris Abley joins us in the studio this morning to talk about his perspective on the budget. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Mitch.
The county board adopted an amended budget this week that is a shade more than $400,000 less than what your budget had called for, which does not seem like a great deal of disagreement. But there are areas of disagreement within that and areas of agreement. So let me ask you first, what areas of agreement do you see?
Well, just to clarify, the budget we introduced had a zero levy increase. The budget the board introduced, or with the amended budget, it's about a $4 million levy increase. And in terms of changes, I think they made about 68 amendments. And as is the case every year, the vast majority of those will accept. But people should know, just to put it in context, around the state, you know, 72 counties, most executive budgets are amended, you know, five, six times, some even less than that. The city of Milwaukee has, I think, 13 amendments. In the 5 years I've been in Milwaukee County, county board has averaged between probably 50 and 70 or so amendments. And every year we accept the vast majority. I accept more amendments from legislators as an executive probably than just about any other executive in the state. The reason I say that is because we always want to try and find places to agree, and we find lots. This year will be no exception. We're working obviously right now on the amendments, but we will likely accept the vast majority of them.
And we should note the $400,000 reference I made is a net difference. And within that, you know, there are obviously the tax levy, right, has a major impact on that.
Right. The difference that your listeners will notice is the levy increase, though. So there, right. The board has a net levy increase of $4 million.
Well, and for the past few years, you have couched your budget in terms of balancing the needs of county residents and county employees, namely that the services the budget provided for were more vital than increases in county salaries. Your budget this year called for an increase. Is that a sign that, in your estimation, the county's fiscal picture has changed enough to warrant it?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things I'm excited about with this budget is every year it's been easier to talk about our proposed budget because we have been in better fiscal shape. We've worked very hard for years to knock hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars off the liability, which means as we pay down the credit card, there's more cash going to services and less just to debt. So this year was the first year that essentially with one exception, we could give every division and department the budget they requested. This is the first year where health care costs to employees didn't go up at all. Premiums are flat. Copay, deductibles, probably not a lot of employers been able to do that. On top of that, we added the most robust tuition reimbursement program we've ever had. I'm a big believer in that sort of program. And this isn't loans. It's $2,500 a year per employee, as many years as they want. They want to take classes and get better. And it's an investment in them, but it's an investment in the county. They're getting better at what they do. But the fact that we can do all this, give departments what they want, give the biggest employee bump we've ever done, on top of our initiative to end chronic homelessness, which, knock on wood, but we're ahead of schedule, as the Public Policy Forum put it, would have been unthinkable 5 years ago. So I'm pretty excited about it.
The Public Policy Forum did sound a note of caution, though. Mm-hmm. One area that has emerged as a source of friction is the drawing on reserves, which the county board in its amended budget cut in half. Given the pension liabilities that are still out there, why do you believe the county is in the position that it can draw on its reserves?
Well, that statement needs several large asterisks.
All right.
5 years ago, we didn't even have a debt reserve. The fact that the executive proposed budgets have built up the debt reserve from essentially zero to about $50 million. In fact, earlier in the year, the county board took $8 million from the reserve and gave it to some departments for things that, as transit told them, they didn't even ask for. And that concerned me. The reason we built up the reserve, though, is that so when we have a situation as we did earlier this year where the actuary for the county said, whoops, we calculated something wrong, your payments into the pension system are going to be a lot bigger these next 2 years, about $20 million each. 5 years ago, we would have had to make huge cuts. But because we built this $50 million reserve, now we're able to make both of those payments the next 2 years, still have money in the reserve, and put out this budget that doesn't raise taxes, gives departments what they want, biggest bump for employees, all sorts of departments, you know, setting all-time records for the people they serve. I mean, we're serving thousands more people than we did 5 years ago. You know, but this is all because we've made a lot of fiscally responsible decisions over the last 5 years.
And you would believe that there will still be enough in that reserve fund that should something unexpected come along.
Yeah. If we the way we've built the debt reserve in the last few years is because we've been building budgets with conservative assumptions. We've been running operating surpluses. Another thing that didn't used to happen, my vote for operating surpluses has been put them in the debt reserve. So when I told the county board in presenting this budget, look, we can cover the $20 million increase in this pension contribution the next 2 years and still have $10 million in the reserve. And that assumes that we get no operating surpluses the next few years. And I'm quite sure we will have operating surpluses, and my vote will again be put it back in the reserve.
Now you mentioned transit, and let's talk about that and a couple of areas. And one, I think you alluded to, the continued existence of the free rides program for seniors, which you opposed when it was created. What would you like to see in terms of that program's future, especially given the stability issues that MCTS has had?
Well, again, to be very clear, I don't oppose more services for seniors. What happened is when at that time Chairwoman Dmitrievich proposed this idea, she hadn't talked to the professionals your tax dollars pay in transit. She hadn't talked to our head of aging. She hadn't talked to our head of disability, all of whom opposed this. We already have a senior discount program, but the issue isn't even that. The issue is we lose a lot of revenue. As I think most of your listeners know, Milwaukee County is getting less money for transit from the state than we were 5 years ago. The fact that in the last 5 years we've been able to have our first five-year stretch in probably two decades with no increase in fares, without cutting routes, has been very, very difficult to do. We're pulling in more tax levy to do that, but it's a priority. So my concern with this is not hey, look, if we had infinite money, free rides for everybody, right? But my job is to make decisions not on the reality I'd like, it's on the reality I've got. And, you know, while I'll keep going to Madison, and I do a lot trying to encourage them to restore our funding, and I think they should for transit, in the meantime, I've got to think about not just, you know, rides this year. I've got to think about rides next year and the year after that, about sustainability.
Well, right. So, okay, maybe it's a semantic issue. Maybe the question is not do you oppose free rides for seniors, right, but what do you think the future of free rides for seniors is? Is the future something more like subsidized rides for seniors?
Yeah, I've looked, and we did at the time, at many other transit systems that have experimented with this. Notably, Chicago tried this a few years and then quickly stopped when they lost, I think it was about $107 million in revenue. You know, my concern is just making sure that the people who need services the most, transit or otherwise, are the ones getting it. And the way this program works out, not all seniors are poor. We have a lot of seniors who do quite well. I mean, this is one of the things we've seen, who use the free rides, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if I've got that kind of investment to make, I'd rather expand meal programs. I'd rather expand job training. I'd rather keep routes going or expand routes to get more people to work or to college to get prepared for work.
The board also passed a measure seeking the creation of a regional transit authority, or at least putting the concept to a referendum. Where do you see an RTA in the context of the future of transit here?
I love regional approaches to services. I liked the idea years ago when it was talked about then, and I like the idea now. You know, the sort of broader question is what's going to be the temperature in Madison among the legislature, and right now it seems like the road builders seem to win a lot of these arguments.
Many have pointed to the public safety budget as an area of disagreement. You mentioned with one exception, each of the departments in your budget was getting an increase, the obvious exception. Your budget called for a $9.8 million abatement. I think that's a 12% cut in its budget?
Actually, our budget gives the sheriff's department exactly the tax levy he got last year. This is an important distinction because many departments absorb abatements. The cost to continue for every department rises. Most departments accept that every year. I mean, not that it's ideal, but we've done it. But to say that it's a $9 million cut is very misleading. The other thing that's misleading, as I've been saying for years, when if you want to talk about public safety, then we should be talking about the police department and the criminal justice system. The part of the criminal justice system that we impact are the courts, the district attorneys, the sort of the back office. And that's something we've increased investments in every year. The sheriff's department, they're not criminal investigation. They're highways, court security, process service. The other big observation that I think we should talk about more, we're a fully incorporated county, and that means that all of your listeners that have a police department also have a sheriff's department. The only other large metro in the country that has police departments everywhere and a large sheriff's department that we could find is Duval County, and they're trying to address that.
That's Florida.
Right. Yeah. You probably actually nice. A lot of people have no idea.
I'll take counties in Florida for $500.
That's right. Say. Yeah. Well, double or nothing. The point is we get a very finite source of revenue from the state, and we don't get to fund everything we'd like. So I have to make a lot of decisions that aren't funding everything that everybody wants, but they're doing the best we can. So where there's redundancies, where I can add new services that aren't already being provided, where I can find efficiencies, I have. Again, the other issue is every year, I'll just point out, before I got to the county, for year after year after year, the sheriff's department's budget is the only one that grew. I mean, it grew about 60%. You put that next to every other department and division of the county and you see lines going down and here's this one that's going up. And none of this has to do with whether or not I care profoundly about public safety, but I also care about evidence-based decision making. And I do think it's fair to talk about the leadership. I have a lot of extraordinary committed public servants, both that I've brought up at the county, people we've brought in who believe in government, who believe in making things work, and they put a ton of time and effort into getting the most impact out of every tax dollar. And I wish I could say that's the same with the sheriff. To be very clear, there's great people there, but he doesn't spend a lot of time with the department and, in my view, lately is saying things in public that I think aren't just repugnant, they're downright dangerous. Comparing the Black Lives Matter movement to ISIS is asinine, untrue and asinine, and encouraging intolerance the way he does, saying blacks are drug dealers because they're lazy and morally bankrupt, that's outrageous. If there's anything that surprises me is that there isn't more noise locally and people saying, hey, look, at what point do we say enough is enough? You don't get to say the sheriff never said things like this. He's been saying things like this for 7 years. We all should be held accountable for the things we do in office. But part of that includes what we say, how we comport ourselves. And I expect that to be held accountable for that. But at what point do we say this is not Milwaukee?
Well, and so let me ask you, as the county executive, what do you see as the cost to the county from having the sheriff making these statements, on an international scale?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I was thinking about this, talking with some friends about it and just trying to understand why is it that there isn't more sort of shared public outrage with the statements from a guy who, nationally is getting some note as, one of the more racist sounding people there is. And I connect it on some level to the fact that Milwaukee sometimes is also pretty quiet about the fact that we have some of the worst statistics in terms of racial disparities in graduation, incarceration rates, unemployment. You know, if we can't speak up when somebody on a national stage is saying things that are, I think, morally outrageous, putting aside this isn't a Republican or a Democrat thing, a liberal or conservative thing. It's just a, you know, moral rightness. If we can't speak up to those remarks, well, how on earth do we expect ourselves to address these other issues we should also be outraged about?
Well, and we should note that both you and the county board are in seeming agreement on the creation of this Office of African American Affairs.
Yeah, we are. I told Supervisor Rainey when he proposed that, that, you know, I'm going to support that, obviously, because I think anything that gets us to have this conversation more in a productive way and more frequently, anything that can help support policy that gets smarter and investments that actually are geared towards making a difference is good. I've already talked to Alderman Willie Wade over at the city, who was sponsoring a similar office there, and some of the department heads there about how we can coordinate, because I want to make sure we do this in as a coordinated way as possible. And I'll obviously follow the progress at the state, where I think it's Leon Young and Senator Taylor who are proposing a state office. But I absolutely think it's appropriate.
County Executive Chris Abley, thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Chris Abley is Milwaukee County Executive. We'll hear from Theo Lipscomb, Chair of the County Board of Supervisors, on Monday's show. You can also find a link to our analysis of the budget with Public Policy Forum President Rob Henkin at WUWM.com.